Okay, here we go. Number one, pay off credit card debt. Yeah, right. Number two, live on less than I earn. Already doing that. Number three, pay myself first. Easier said than done. I'm Jabalani LaFall, and on today's Central Standard, we're discussing some simple rules that might help straighten out your personal finances, even if some are way easier than others. We'll talk about where to start. Our Cash Money Click is back to talk about the 10 Commandments of Financial Planning. It's an opportunity to take the first steps in getting your money in order. Baby steps now, no crawling. We'll walk with you on Central Standard after this hour's news. Good morning, Kansas City. Whether you've learned from the Hebrew prophet Moses, the actor Charlton Heston, or the comedian George Carlin, you've no doubt heard many an interpretation of the Ten Commandments. Well, today, we have another take, fresh off the mountaintop. This is Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. So you ask, what type of take do we have on the Ten Commandments? Well, check this out.
It's time now for financial planning advice with the Cash Money Crew.
With us once again is our Cash Money Click crew, and we have some stand-in members for the Click today. Our guest, Lucas Bulchel, he's a certified financial planner with KHC Wealth Management. Ken Eaton is also a certified financial planner with Stepan Rothwell, and the current president, I might add, of the Kansas City chapter of the Financial Planning Association, and Sandy Weaver, always a welcome guest from Financial Security Advisors. Welcome to the show, Cash Money crew.
Thank you.
Now, Financial Planning Week was October 1st through the 7th, which was last week. Can we get a sort of recap there, Ken?
Right. Well, Financial Planning Week is really just an effort by the National Financial Planning Association to help people understand how important it is to make a plan. You know, if there's one thing that we learned from the debates last week was that the government is not going to pay for our retirement, so everybody has to make their own plan. And we do things in the public eye that we think will help them understand that. So here locally, we had a call-in show on the local news channel so that people could call in and ask us any question that they had about their personal finances.
Like a call-in show, like maybe here?
Like here.
Locally, right. Like the radio.
Right.
So the government's not going to pay for our retirement?
Afraid not.
That's shocking. Very, very, very shocking. Tell us about the financial planning process itself. How do you get started, Lucas?
Well, I think the first way to start is to just kind of figure out what your goals are. So the first step in the process is to kind of establish a relationship with the financial planner and gather your data and then clarify your goals. That's really how you get started.
Now, the theme of today's show is the Ten Commandments of Financial Planning, as culled from many sources, including thestreet.com. We should mention, Sandy, the first commandment, thou shalt take action. What does taking action mean in terms of getting a financial plan on deck?
It means deciding what your goals are. Do you want to retire someday ever? You know, drop out of the saddle would be good. Also, do you have other goals, such as putting children through college? Do you have other goals, such as paying off debt that you may have right now? Usually, inertia will not make those things happen. You have to sit down with yourself, write a few things down, and some action steps to make it happen.
Inertia is something that doesn't work in the world of finance, right, Kenny?
Right. I like to think of your financial plan as planning a road trip. You know, let's say you want to go to Los Angeles. You can imagine the palm trees and the beach all you want, but until you actually get in the car and put your foot on the gas, you're not going to get anywhere. So you really have to start to take action before anything is going to happen for you.
And, of course, if you go there by Amtrak, it takes 7,000 days. So it kind of depends on what plan you put together, right, Lucas?
Absolutely.
What type of plan should you put together when taking action initially?
Well, the first step is to look at your situation and really get your cash flow in order. That's where the plan starts, is figuring out what you take in and what goes out, and then what's left over at the end of the month is really what you can use towards your goals.
That brings us to commandment number two, thou shalt pay off thy credit card debt. That soundeth easier enough, but what approach does thou havest for us, Ken Eden?
Well, if you're talking about, first of all, I would say don't have credit card debt in the first place.
Right.
So if you're young, you haven't gotten any credit card debt yet, don't take it. There's no reason for you to take 20 years to pay off that pair of boots that you so desperately want. But if you do have credit card debt, take a look at the interest rates on all of those credit cards. Make sure that you're paying off the ones with the highest interest rates. And it also helps for you to pay off the ones with the lowest balances, just because from an emotional standpoint, you feel better about having one less bill to pay every month.
Is that high on your commandments list, if you were putting together your own list? We sort of called this from a variety of sources. But Sandy Weaver, is that high on your list?
Yes, absolutely. It's almost step one. You combine that with building a reserves. Lots of times it's hard to prioritize, which is most important. One additional technique you can use when paying off credit cards is what they call that snowballing. And in addition to what Ken mentioned of paying the highest interest rate first, you know, you make the minimum payments on all of them. And as soon as you pay off one that has a small balance, you take the payment that was going to that one and combine it with the next one, the next smallest balance, so that you start knocking some of those off. And that provides motivation.
Luke, is this consolidation of credit card debt a good idea?
It depends on the situation. I think consolidating can be a good idea if you can get a lower rate, but that's rate really drives what you're trying to do. And, you know, obviously the less you can pay in interest on the cards, the faster you can pay those off over the long term.
We're talking about credit card debt, but let's maybe dispel some myths here about debt. The so-called good debt of student loans and medical debt, is that good debt or is that kind of a myth? Is it better than credit card debt? Tell us about that.
I think debt that's kind of gone to a good cause, that's helped you develop educationally, is absolutely good debt. I think when you're trying to rate debt, debt that's been invested in you to enhance your skills or make you better is positive, especially if it was taken out in a responsible way and done with the correct intention. Same thing with mortgage debt. If that's helping you meet your objective of owning a home, and you've got a plan to pay that off over time, that's acceptable debt that's for a useful purpose. Things like credit card debt, though, get labeled as bad debt, and rightfully so, because it's really an indication of overspending if you haven't paid that off when you intended to.
Ken Eden, is it an aging problem? Do you pay off the oldest debt first? Do you pay off the highest debt first when it comes to credit cards?
Well, like I said, I think the interest rate is the most important thing. How old the debt is doesn't really matter. I mean, what's most important is making sure that you're paying the lowest interest, you know, over time. So I don't really think there's an aging issue as much as there is just making sure. I would say, you know, Sandy made a really good point, which is make sure that you're making at least the minimum payment on every credit card. I'm not saying just pay one credit card off and then start on another one, because obviously the most important thing for you is your credit rating. And if you don't make all of those payments on time, that credit rating is going to make your home mortgage loan interest rate much higher than it would be if you had good credit.
How has the nature of credit card debt and credit changed since our latest credit crunch and what we've discovered about the nature of credit and the malleability but also the frailty of credit? What have we learned?
I would say the one thing that most consumers have learned is that if something goes wrong, if they lose a job, if they have you know, lower income than they expected, if their income doesn't increase like they expected, if it doesn't, you know, they don't get those raises that they expected, that credit card debt can be a real hindrance. I mean, again, to go back to that road trip analogy, you know, I think of credit cards as that trailer behind your car, you know. So you're taking that road trip, and you've all seen the trailer that kind of pulls you one way and pulls you the other, and the car can barely stay on the road. If you have too much credit card debt, you get to the point where the car can't even pull that trailer anymore. And so what people are learning now is that when there are good times, they should get rid of all of that debt, and then when there are poor times, they're going to be in much better shape.
But that's the reverse, isn't it, Lucas? When there are good times, people are running up their debt.
Absolutely. And I think the other thing that we've learned through this case is that the debt and the extension of credit isn't endless. I think a lot of people that were kind of living their life in the good times using debt found that when the financial crisis hit and the credit crunch hit, you know, banks and credit card companies stopped extending credit when they found you were in trouble or if you'd lost your job. And if you've been financing your lifestyle with debt over that period of time, and shockingly, somebody won't give it to you anymore, you're in a world of hurt.
News from the top of the mountain, credit card debt and credit itself is finite. Imagine that. Imagine that. We are talking about the Ten Commandments of personal finance. The first one is thou shalt take action. The second being thou shalt pay thy credit card debt. You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 KCUR, streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm your host, Jabalani Lafar. Cash Money Click is here today with, as I mentioned, the Ten Commandments coming down from the mountain of debt with edicts written in stone for your personal finance needs. We're talking with Lucas Bushell. He's a certified financial planner with KHC Wealth Management, and Ken Eaton is the president of the Kansas City chapter of the Financial Planning Association, and also with Step and Rothwell, and Sandy Weaver is with Financial Security Advisors. Kansas City, what sayest thou about thine own shekels and coins? Questions for our Cash Money Click on the Ten Commandments of Personal Finance. Lucas is in here loving it. Give us a call if you have questions about your personal finances or if you have your own commandments that you live by. Join the conversation. Give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or shoot us an email at centralstandard@kcur.org. Okay. Commandment number three of the Ten Commandments. Thou shalt understand the difference between wants and needs. Sandy, this is a crucial one. Talk about that one. Your colleague David Jackson talks about that all the time.
Absolutely. And it talks about financing your lifestyle with debt. That 50-inch TV you bought 2 years ago, you can't take that back to the store and get your $2,500 back. That's on your credit card now, and you'll have to pay that off. So it's really important before you decide to finance your lifestyle with debt, it's really important to decide what you really have to have in order to be happy in life. You know, how much do you have coming in on your paycheck after taxes are paid? Give 10% to yourself for savings, and then budget carefully with the rest.
Ken, we sort of have a mentality in this country as a consumer economy of buying what we want and then turning around and asking for what we need. How do you, as a financial planner, with someone at the beginning stage, get them to see that this is the case and change that mentality?
You know, the best financial advice that I ever received, I read in a book, and it was very simple. It was, you can have anything you want, you just can't have everything you want. And unfortunately, in this day and age, with, you know, people like the Kardashians on TV, everybody seems to think that they should be able to have everything, because that's what the reality television programs show you. That's what, you know, the advertisers want you to think. But the fact is that we all have to make choices. Nobody can have everything. And once you figure that out, then you start to think about what's really important to you.
So, Lucas, the commercials with old men on nice sweaters and sitting on boats with the secure financial future, that's not true?
It can be true, but it takes a lot of hard work and planning to get to that point. I think to kind of piggyback on the needs versus wants, advertisers have a keen interest in making wants turn into needs and making you feel like you have to have that. That's a need for you. And I think that when you're looking at your cash flow and budget, it's really good to put on a piece of paper two columns and say, these are things I absolutely have to have, and these are really the wants that I get to choose to that I want to buy. And then once you kind of figure out how you're going to meet the needs, the wants column, you can prioritize and see which of those are most important to you. But you have to take care of the needs first, and the horse trading between the two is kind of the most powerful part of budgeting.
Kansas City, how do you horse trade? How do you balance the difference between your wants and your needs financially? Join the conversation at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or you can shoot us an email at centralstandard@kcur.org to join the conversation as we talk about the Ten Commandments of personal finance. How do you break that want versus need cycle, and how do you break it to a client truthfully, not in a sort of antagonizing, entertaining Susie Orman way, but in a sort of pragmatic way?
You know, one interesting experience which is very helpful is when we ask people to write down what they're spending and where they're spending it, because that's a process very few of us do. And it takes a weekend. And usually we encourage both sides to sit down at the kitchen table and do that. So it's a learning process for both of them. But you go through your checkbook, you go through your credit card statements, you go through your debit card statements, and you see where that money's going. And you start then to go back through that list and, was that worth it to me? Do I want that, or do I want to have the flexibility or even the option perhaps to retire at 60 or 59?
So from a financial planning standpoint, it's much easier when you see it laid out, like you're saying to yourself, man, I spent $50 on puffy, fuzzy earmuffs. What was I thinking? So, sort of that mentality, right, Ken?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really important to understand that we're not saying you should never purchase a want.
Right.
In fact, if you work hard all day, every day, you're doing it so that you can have the little luxuries.
You deserve those earmuffs.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
If the earmuffs are more important to you than the jacket. I mean, the problem is that everybody wants the earmuffs and the jacket. So, yeah, laying that stuff out in front of you and asking which one is more important and, you know, balancing the wants and needs is the best way to do it.
Okay, next up, as we canvass our audience on them balancing their wants and needs and what 10 commandments of personal finance they live by, 816-235-2888, by the way. Once again, the number is 816-235-2888. Let's move on in our 10 commandments. Next up in the personal finance commandment list, number 4, which is partly related to number 3 on living above your means or buying what you need versus what you want. Ready? Thou shalt live on less than you earn. That goes right along with the wants and needs, understanding those differences. Talk about that, Lucas.
This is the key to financial success. It's no more complicated than that. You can have folks that make lots and lots of money that spend even more. And you can have folks that make, you know, $30,000 a year that are able to spend less than they make and kind of secure themselves financially in the future. So this is absolutely the most important commandment if you had to rank them, in my opinion, across the board. And it really is that simple. It's living on less than you make and then doing something productive with the difference.
Andy in Leawood, welcome to Central Standards Personal Finance Hour, the 10 Commandments of Personal Finance. What say you?
One of the things that I say is that, you know, I've seen the times change. You know, I'm almost 50 years old. And there are a lot of things now that seem like needs that didn't even exist when I was younger. I mean, mobile phones and cable television and the internet, you know, things that you look at and they're obviously costs that you end up paying every month. And, I look at where I am and I think, well, you know, how many of these things could I shut off? And then I look at my kids and I think, you know, they're never going to want to shut those things off. And I just kind of wondered what your opinion was on new things that cost money like that.
All right. That's a very good question, Andy. The generational chasm, if you will, of wanton consumerism versus necessity-based transactions. And that's something that we face with generations there, Ken.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's unfortunate, but the internet may be a need at this point. I mean, when you think about your kids doing their homework, they don't go to the library anymore. They go to the internet to do their research. TLC a need? Probably not. But there are some that you have to be in touch with the world. So,
are you talking Tinder, Love, and Care or the Learning Channel?
The Learning Channel.
Okay.
Actually,
okay.
Is it the Learning Channel? I don't know. TLC sounds like it might be a need. Sorry.
Right. But again, cable TV versus getting a hug is a want versus need
type of
conversation.
Yeah.
Todd in Olathe, welcome to Central Standards Personal Finance, 10 Commandments of Personal Finance Hour with the Cash Money Click. Go ahead, Todd.
Good morning. Something that's worked for me is to wait 24 hours before I purchase some items. It doesn't take care of everything, but a lot of the impulse buys, it takes it away from you. And if you still need it the next day, it gets rid of that temptation right there at the spur of the moment.
That's a very good edict to live by from Todd and Olathe. Thank you for joining the conversation. Do you agree with that, Lucas? Thinking before you leap?
Absolutely, especially on the bigger purchases. I think that's great advice, and it really helps you kind of put things in perspective and think about, is this something that I really need to have, and what am I sacrificing somewhere else to have that?
The first commandment that we had in our Ten Commandments, just to recap for those who may just be joining us, was thou shalt take action, thou shalt pay off credit card debt, and we were on the other one, number four, thou shalt live on less than you earn. And number three was thou shalt determine wants versus needs. Now, let's talk about a little bit about the initial finance planning stage, because we just got an email from Margene in Liberty. She says that her and her family recently met with several financial planners who want 1 or 1.5% of their portfolio to, quote unquote, manage their finances each year. All of our savings are in 401k, she says, and she's managed an annual rate of return between 8 and 12% in our 401ks over the last 32 years. We want to retire in about 5 years. You just need someone to tell them if they're on track. Can giving a certified financial planner 1% of our portfolio really help us earn that much more? I'm sort of the belief that no one cares about my money as much as I do. Can you address Margene and Liberty, Sandy Weaver?
Yeah, there are two or three routes you can go. You can hire a financial planner. Fee-only financial planners typically charge 1% as the industry average. You also should ask, though, what you'll get for your money. Some types of planners will manage your investments. Other types of managers will not only manage your investments, they'll also include retirement projections, tax strategies, education planning, some estate planning advice. Another route of financial planner is that works on more of a commission basis, and that is everybody gets compensated. There's no free lunch. So the planners that work on a commission basis may sell you investment or insurance products. Those will help your investments. They may or may not include retirement projections, estate planning help, tax strategies with that. The other type, though, is what this woman is pursuing, a more of a do-it-your-own approach, and what she may be interested in is if she's had good success, like it sounds like, is getting a planner that works on an hourly basis, maybe to just calculate and answer the specific questions that she has.
We got Paulina in the Plaza area. Welcome to Central Standard.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
Love your show, by the way.
Thank you.
But I wanted to share a comment about the wants and the needs. I used to be a shoeaholic and a clothesaholic, which I know a lot of women out there fitted to that category, but how I changed that effect, because I could get my credit like crazy just thinking, okay, that looks good on me, I want it, instead of really needing it. So what I did is I made a plan. Anything that I want or that I want to get, I have to be willing to give at least three items away in my closet to Salvation Army or to some other nonprofit organization. So if I see a pair of boots that I want, I have to go home and see which pair of boots, at least two or three, that I am willing to donate before I go and buy those boots. And it has changed my whole philosophy on making sure that I am thinking of, really, do I need that, because I have three other pairs of boots, which of those am I willing to give up for that one pair? The same goes for all my clothes, any accessories, and it has saved me. I have been redeemed, and my bank account shows it, and so I'm really doing a smarter thing now. So I wanted to share that with any other women, or even some men out there that are clothesaholics and shoeaholics, that it changed my life. And so even though there are things that I still give to the Salvation Army, I really think, do I really need that or do I just want it? So being able to go home and relooking in my closet, what am I going to give away if I want that item so bad? So it stifles me. I just think about it and say, no, I really don't need it. I still have some good stuff in my closet.
Paulina has been redeemed. You can almost see the ray of light coming down from heaven and the outstretched hands of the Ten Commandments of Personal Finance, which we are going through so far. Take action, pay off credit, determine your wants versus needs, live on less than you earn. And that's where we are so far in our Ten Commandments of Personal Finance. Sandy, you had something to add.
Yes, one other trick that others might think about working with themselves if they tend to buy once without thinking is, it's sort of a dark ages approach to budgeting, but it's the envelope method. You dole out the money, you pay yourself first, you you know, put the savings for the month into an account, and then you dole out the money. And you have so much for lunches, you have so much for the Starbucks morning run, you have so much for the mortgage payment. And then what's left in that one envelope is what you get to spend on the wants. And that can help cap that also.
John, who's rolling on I-29, real time. Welcome to Central Standard. Real?
Thank you. Enjoy your program.
Thank you.
A question for your guest, and it seems like all financial planning and stuff is geared toward middle class and upper middle class. What my question is, and I think is something that a lot of the lower middle class and the poor that are working two or three jobs, real income hasn't increased since the 70s, and take-home pay and stuff. What are their recommendations? And when you're living paycheck to paycheck and working two jobs just to make bare minimum to get feed your children, send them to school, get them the essentials that they need, and what they consider luxuries or wants and needs, what are the recommendations for them? Because they're in that financial strata that says, you know, that they can't get ahead right now. And what are their recommendations? I mean, you know, give some real-time advice to people that are struggling working two and three jobs and paycheck to paycheck rather than saying spend less and more when everything that you're taking home is going for essentials. And I'll hang up now and listen on the radio. Thank you.
Thank you for listening on the radio and joining the conversation, John. Sandy Weaver, you have some startling statistics about people who live from paycheck to paycheck, about 38%. Actually admit that they live from paycheck
to
paycheck.
That's true, yes. 30% reported that they feel comfortable financially, but 38% were living paycheck to paycheck.
Wow, that's a pretty big number. We got Catherine in Mission Hill. Welcome to Central Standard.
Hi, I like your talk today. I just wanted to backtrack to your phrase, the generational chasm. I am one of those who didn't have computers, cell phones, whatever, when I was growing up. Now, of course, my kids do, but I've tried to show that we don't have to buy the new cell phone. We can go online and find the used cell phones that people are selling. And so if they need a cell phone, that might be what we get. Also, they're familiar with shopping at thrift stores, which has actually become kind of cool now when you're a kid or a high school kid. So I like the green component, too, of buying used and being happy with that.
All right. Thank you very much, Catherine. Addressing the last caller's question about addressing the wants versus needs for people who are living from paycheck to paycheck, how do you tell your kid, you know what, go ahead and mess with this H phone. The iPhone is too expensive. Take this H phone instead. It's a variation on the iPhone. It's okay. iPhone-like.
Okay. I think one thing is when you have children who want a very high-priced ticket item is to let them buy into the process with you and give them matching funds. Perhaps you're willing to put up two-thirds what the H phone costs, and they can earn the difference to get to the iPhone level.
Before people start calling and asking about H phones, let's get on to the next commandment. We're at the halfway point of the Ten Commandments of Personal Finance. Thou shalt payeth yourself first. Does anyone do this? And if not, isn't this the problem for most of us, Sandy?
Well, you know, really a lot of America does this. That's what's, you know, the automatic employee deduction going into the 401k is. And it's an excellent strategy. It goes in there automatically before it can be spent. It's very costly, and there's penalties if you take it out. So a lot of America does that. In fact, I have another number in front of me. I'll let that one pass. Sorry.
You've heard it here first. Take action. Pay off credit card debt. Understand want versus need and live on less than you earn. Also, the fifth commandment being pay yourself first. And you had something quick to add there, Lucas?
Yeah, absolutely. Paying yourself first is you know, the kind of a nice way of living below your income. So one of the prior commandments, it really is about that. So you set aside an amount right away at the beginning of the month when you get paid so you don't even feel like you have that money to spend. And then as you kind of go through the rest of the month, you're spending only the money that you had planned to spend. So the money for the savings for your other objectives is already set aside. And really that's a way to not really trick yourself, but I think just manage your cash flow effectively and make sure you're putting money towards the things that you've told yourself are most important.
Take action. Pay off credit card debt. Understand wants versus needs. Live on less than you earn. And also pay yourself first. Those are the first five commandments of personal finance. There are 10, you know. And our guests are the Cash Money Click of Financial Advisors. They are Lucas Bushell. He's a certified financial planner with KHC Wealth Management. We got Ken Eaton. He's with Stephen Rothwell and the current president of the Kansas City chapter of the Financial Planning Association. And Sandy Weaver of Financial Security Advisors. Kansas City, do you have your own Ten Commandments of Personal Finance that you'd like to impart? What sayest thou about thine own shekels and coins? Give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or shoot us an email at centralstandard@kcur.org. And welcome back to Central Standard. I'm your host, Jabalani LaFall. Frank Hubbard, a very funny cartoonist, said the safe way to double your money is to fold it once over and put it in your pocket. That's very true, but we have professionals who can go into greater detail, and in fact, they're here with us right now, giving us the Ten Commandments of Personal Finance. And so it has come to pass that our guests are the Cash Money Click of Financial Advisors, Lucas Bushell. He's with a certified financial planner with KHC Wealth Management. Ken Eaton is a certified financial planner with Stephen Rothwell and the current president of the Kansas City chapter of the Financial Planning Association. And we also have Sandy Weaver of Financial Security Advisors. Kansas City, do you have your own Ten Commandments of Personal Finance that you'd like to impart? Would you like to talk about income inequality and how to approach that in terms of personal finance? Would you like to talk about your own budgets? Give us a call. Nothing is out of bounds. These are the Ten Commandments, by the way. It is a very ritualistic thing that we're doing here. We even have a staff. I'll let that sink into somebody. We have a personal finance staff to part your red sea on your balance sheet. Somebody out there is getting that and saying, I like that guy. 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. We're going to go directly to Mike in Grandview.
Yes, how are you doing today?
We're doing great. Talk to us.
I was calling because of two things. John called a minute ago about being in a lower middle class or lower income bracket, and he asked what he could do because he lives paycheck to paycheck, and nobody really answered his question. And I did have one bit of advice for him. If he could, join a union, because a union would allow him financial gains to move out of the lower middle class into the middle class where everybody should be. So I would like to hear what the financial planners have to say to people in the lower income brackets, how to get themselves in better shape.
Thank you very much, Mike from Grandview. And Sandy Weaver was sort of clamoring to address this living from paycheck to paycheck income inequality question. So go ahead, take that away.
Absolutely. I have three things I'd like to cover. One of those is that budgeting is even more important for you at when you have limited resources like that. It's more important than if you're middle income or upper income. And I would recommend that you hail to the library, hike over there and get a workbook about budgeting, or get on the computers there and go to mint.com or quicken.com and start budgeting, start getting really good at that. Because when you have limited resources and you also have limited time, you want to be the best budgeter in the city. Also, you can go to Consumer Credit Counseling, and they will offer you budgeting how-tos. And their charges are based on your income level. So at some point, that can be free. Also, there is, on both the Missouri and Kansas side, individual development account programs. The Family Conservancy runs one here in Kansas City on the Kansas side. Interfaith Housing Services runs one out over in western Kansas. Those help participants. They have classes that participants go through that teach good money management skills. They also teach those participants how to save. And people can give to those programs and receive lucrative state tax credits. But if you're a participant and let's say you save $25 one month, then the pool of money is matched 2-for-1. So you'll end up having $75 in the bank.
This goes right along with our commandments 6 and 7 of the Ten Commandments of Personal Finance. Thou shalt set financial goals and thou shalt educate yourself and be responsible for your decisions. Those two kind of work in tandem, setting financial goals and then educating yourself to be able to reach them. Talk about that, Lucas.
Well, we've been spending a lot of time talking about spending decisions, needs versus wants, and I think one of the cornerstones of financial planning is to evaluate and set financial goals. And, you know, really that's where the financial planning process begins. And when you're looking at these spending decisions, if you've set financial goals, you've written them down, and you're working towards those, it really can put those spending decisions in a new context, right? So if you have a goal to, you know, put my kids through education or be able to save X amount a year for my daughter's college courses, you know, when you're at that point of purchase, you're thinking about, you know, buying that new coat or that new pair of boots that Kim mentioned. You know, you can think back to, okay, well, what's the opportunity cost here? You know, if it's the contribution to my daughter's education fund, you know, it may change your mind and it may change how you're viewing things. So, I mean, I think that's why financial planning is so powerful is you start with your goals and you start by prioritizing what's most important to you and then build a plan, one of which is your cash flow management, building a plan to accomplish those things over time.
Ken, you had something to add?
You know, as financial planners, we always think about the big goals, you know, putting your kid through college or retirement, all those kinds of things. But goals, even financial goals, don't have to be that large. They could be as simple as having $250 in your bank account so that the next time your car needs brakes, you don't have to put that on your credit card. You know, I mean, there are issues that befall every person. And so one of the first goals you want to make is just to have some money set aside to cover you for a rainy day. I mean, you know, all these other things are fine and good, but especially if you're in that, you know, lower middle to lower socioeconomic class, the first thing you want to do is make sure that you're in control of your own life. And the best way to do that is to have some money set aside.
Clara in Overland Park is trying to get in control of her finances. Welcome to Central Standard. Clara.
Hi.
Hi.
My question was just, I'm in my last year of college at KU, and I was wondering, you hear a lot of people talk a lot about getting a credit card and just paying like one bill a month or paying for your gas just to build up your credit rating, and I don't know anything about that. And so I was wondering, do you need to have something like that before I go off looking for jobs and trying to get my own apartment and things like that?
Wow. Clara strikes an interesting question to our Cash Money Click of financial advisors. What's your advice?
It's probably good to have some credit history, even if you have to do a secured credit card where you basically bank put in escrow the amount of money first. But if you get a credit card, use it every month for small purchases, make absolutely sure you pay off the balance every month, then it hasn't hurt you. You know, don't forget, credit card interest is not tax deductible. So as a CPA, you know, that's not good. That's not good credit, as Zookas would say. So,
Oscar in Westport, welcome to Central Standard.
Yes, Zavani, I have a question for Sandy.
Okay, question for Sandy Weaver. Go ahead.
Yeah, Sandy, I'm a single parent. I'm raising three boys of my own. I put two of them through college and kind of live paycheck to paycheck like most people do. Trying to find some kind of sound investment for a little money I might have to store away or invest in. I've got a Roth kind of IRS deal, but it always eats into my principal, so it doesn't go. And all that's predicated upon the stock market these days. And then there's bonds, which, you know, and then, you know, I've heard about the CDs in banks and also money market accounts in banks that might give you a little interest here and there. And I heard of gold. So family or person in my caliber or status, what can I invest in to get some money in the future?
All right. How can Oscar grow his nest egg, or sounds like he's trying to grow something extra for some rolling income?
Right. Yeah. Money markets, as we all know, aren't paying much right now. You have there's a great deal of encouragement by the Fed to start taking on more risk, usually in the equities and stock markets. You might decide to educate yourself going to a group called the American Association of Individual Investors. They have monthly meetings around town. It's a way for you to gain knowledge and talk to other people who are doing investing on their own. You can also go to places, brokerages around town, work with a stockbroker. You can go to a financial planner and talk with them. But you need to decide how much risk you're willing to take. If you want to put your principal at risk, what kind of rate of return you're trying to shoot for first? What's reasonable, perhaps, is to get a feel for that first before I'd plunk down a dollar. I'd do the research first.
You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 KCUR, streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm your host, Jabalani LaFall. We're discussing with our Cash Money Click what is called the Ten Commandments of Financial Planning. Our guests are Lucas Buchel. He's with KHC Wealth Management. Ken Eaton is the president of the Kansas City chapter of Financial Planning Association, and he's with Stepp and Rothwell. And Sandy Weaver of the Financial Security Advisors is the voice you just heard. Kansas City, I never get to use Old English or King James Version Bible English on the radio, so I hope if you can beareth with us on this day. Tell us about your personal finances. What are your concerns? What sayest thou about thine own shekels and coins? That's very fun, by the way. Questions for our Cash Money Click on the Ten Commandments of Personal Finance. If you have any of those, give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or shoot us an email at centralstandard@kcur.org. Brings us to commandment number 8. We're well into the commandments. And this one is tricky. This one we just got finished talking to Oscar in Westport about, Sandy Weaver, is thou shalt save and invest. A lot of people can't save because they're living from paycheck to paycheck. A lot of people are leery about investing after the volatile stock markets of this recessionary period. How do we get over this hump, mentality-wise? Saving and investing.
It's important to save. I agree totally with Lucas. Save out of your paycheck first. Mm-hmm. Your pension plan is one of the best ways to save. At least take advantage of the company match. After that, the best bang for the buck, if you're saving, is going to make a Roth IRA contribution if you can do that. The third best way to save then after that is to go back to your pension and give up to the maximum that you can in there. After that, if you can't qualify for a Roth IRA contribution, go make a contribution to a regular IRA if you qualify for that. The fifth best bang for the buck is to do a non-deductible. After that, if you have high marginal interest rate tax bracket, a cheap annuity might be a way to invest after that.
Marcus and Waldo, welcome to Central Standard.
Yes, hi. Good morning. I just wanted to share kind of the practice of my spouse and I. When we first met, we decided that we would keep finances separate, and we would share household finances, and we keep a really exacting detail records of it. And at various times of the year, we reckon the score, pay whomever owes money. And I think it has helped us. In fact, we've actually kept that separate so that in our own 401ks and all, even though the advisors want to know what the spouse is making, we keep that separate. And it makes us both responsible for our own being. And we don't argue about money.
That's a good policy to have from Marcus and Waldo, a mentality that separates your finances. What do you think about that, Lucas?
I would ask Marcus how he accounts for the long-term savings and the long-term goals that he and his wife focus on, and that would be the big question is how they handle joint expenses.
Marcus, how do you handle joint expenses?
Well, we keep track of it. For example, utilities and things of that nature, it rotates every month, and at the end of the year, however those expenses turned out in terms of house insurance when we pay that or taxes, we deal with all of that, and it pays up. We pay each other up. Even when we take trips, when we get home, we itemize the costs of those things and rectify that. And by doing that, just with the person you share your life with most, it makes one more responsible, or at least it does in this household, makes each other responsible for their own retirement funds. And we're both, we've reached retirement, so we've been successful at it.
Thank you, Marcus, for your contribution to the conversation. Lucas, and then Ken has something to add.
Yeah, I think that strategy can work. I think a couple of things to think about are if you have substantially different incomes, one spouse may be able to spend a lot more money than the other if they're kind of doing everything separate. The second thing is if you are trying to save for a joint retirement or any other sort of joint major purchases or goals, kind of figuring out how that gets handled by each spouse and how they each contribute are kind of critical for success.
The personal finance 10 commandments is what we've been discussing here on Central Standard today with Lucas Buchu, Ken Eaton, and Sandy Weaver. They're all financial planners and all members of the Financial Planning Association of Greater Kansas City. What's the difference between being conservative and being a penny-pinching miser when we talk about commandment number 9, thou shalt protect your finances? We'll go with Lucas. Lucas is kind of smirking at that, so we'll go with Lucas first.
I smile because I've been accused of being a penny-pinching miser myself. I think the
who did that?
really, my brother.
Okay.
So
okay.
Yeah, he likes to give me a hard time about that. But I think the big thing is balance. It's really about living well now and also planning for your future. So making sure that you're taking the steps you need to accomplish what you want to do in the future, but also knowing that nothing is guaranteed. I mean, life can be short, and you never know what's in store down the road. So. Kind of having a balance between, what you're spending your money on and what's important to you today and what's important to you in the future and committing your resources to accomplish both.
Ken, going off what Lucas just said, it kind of reminds you of the old saying, money is something that you have in case you don't die.
Right. Right, yeah.
So talk about protecting your finances. We're at commandment number 9 there. Protecting your finances.
Well, when we talk about protecting our finances, what we're talking about is making sure that if something happens to us that is unexpected, that we're not devastated by it. So insurance is usually the way that people protect their finances. One thing to remember about insurance, though, is it's really there for those uncommon events that are really going to devastate us as opposed to the cracked windshield. What you're really trying to do with insurance is pay a little bit for the eventuality that something really bad could happen, like a house fire.
Is this the sort of supplementary insurance that you see with the duck walking around quacking? I'm not going to say it. I'm not going to give them a free advertisement. But what type of insurance are you talking about? There, I mean, of course, the government has unemployment insurance for that unknown calamity in your life. There's renter's insurance, there's life insurance, there's auto insurance. What insurance are you talking about that sort of covers the whole gamut?
Well, actually, there isn't any one insurance that covers the whole gamut. I mean, there is house
that
insurance.
Sucks.
That's really, yeah. Well, I mean, renter's insurance is something that a lot of people don't think about. But if your apartment burns down, they'll rebuild your apartment, but they won't give you the stuff that was in it before. And renter's insurance is really cheap. It's one of those things that you're out of you don't have the control over, right? I mean, somebody else in another apartment could leave grease on the stove and that could burn down your whole apartment. So it's really important for you to protect yourself from the things that you don't have complete control over. Obviously, you don't have complete control over your health, so you need health insurance. You don't have complete control over when you die. And so if you have people that depend on you, if you're gone, then life insurance is important. The duck actually is not a bad idea. That's long-term disability insurance, and that's there so that if you get hurt and you can't work any longer, you get a paycheck. There's nothing wrong with that. In fact, that's probably a more likely scenario than a person dying early.
We're going to go to Marilyn in Atchison, Kansas. We have a little bit of phone trouble here, but we're going to sort it out. People are hanging up on us left and right. Richard on the plaza. Now we have nobody. Okay. I guess the conversation about the duck sort of scared everybody away. What would you say, Ken, is the difference between being conservative and being a penny-pinching miser when it comes to protecting your finances? Can't take it with you.
Well, that's right. And, this is kind of touchy-feely, but one thing you might want to do is sit down and make a list of those things that if you knew you were going to die tomorrow, that you would be sorry you didn't do, For some people, travel is really, really important. It's getting to know the world. And so if that's something that's really important to you, you probably don't want to put that off. But you're going to have to figure out what you're going to give up to make that a priority.
It's all about opportunity cost, foregoing one alternative, giving up another alternative. That's what we do in the world of finance and in the world of behavioral economics as well.
Right.
Richard on the plaza.
Yeah, great show. Thanks for the brain trust there.
No problem.
Real quickly, could you ask your guests to list their three criteria for picking a financial planner? Because I think most people, average Joes, I know I am, kind of intimidated by how to choose somebody. I mean, they all have different methods of charging, different strategies. you know, different products that maybe they offer that another financial planner doesn't. There's all different types of firms out there, small firms, big firms, brokers. You know, it's just really very confusing. And in the post-Madoff era, I guess, you know, you're always concerned that you get somebody that's doing something shy. And even short of that, you might just get somebody that's incompetent. And just saying, well, pick somebody you're comfortable with. Well, you're probably comfortable with a lot of them. They're salesmen at heart, and they're going to try and make you feel comfortable. What if your guests had to pick a financial planner for themselves, what three criteria would they use?
Okay, thank you, Richard. Let's give the guests a chance to do that. Three criteria. We got a lot of lists. 10 commandments, 3 criteria. We're going to go with, since we have 3 guests, we'll split it up that way. Sandy, 1.
Okay. Well, let me do a third, a third, a third then.
Okay.
I would recommend that you first decide, go look into the, you know, 3 roughly basic forms of compensation and decide which one you like best of that. That is, you know, by the hour, you might like commission, you might like fee only. Then I also would sit back and decide how much services do I need? Do I want to manage my own investments? Do I want to run my own retirement projections? Do I want someone else to do all that, go from one end to the other? The third thing is I would highly recommend you interview 3 people at least, and maybe just interview a couple, and then decide the answers to those questions. But I would interview 3 different planners at least so that you can compare and contrast.
Ken?
You know, the first thing I would say is that you want someone who has your best interests at heart. You need to understand why they're giving you the advice they're giving you. If they're selling something, then obviously they have an ulterior motive. It may not mean that you don't need it, but it is something that you have to keep in mind. Second, I think they need to be competent. You should probably look for a certified financial planner designation or another designation that's at least as rigorous as that one.
Our guests are Lucas Buschel. He's a certified financial planner with KHC Wealth Management. Ken Eden, whose voice you just heard, he's a CFP with Stepan Rothwell and is the current president of the Kansas City chapter of the Financial Planning Association. We also have Sandy Weaver of Financial Security Advisors. Thank you all for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And you can get a full list of the 10 Commandments of Personal Finance from our Cash Money Click of Financial Experts on our website at kcur.org. We'd like to thank Lucas, Ken, and Sandy once again for coming. Tune in tomorrow when we go to Ideological Church with American Atheists. Our show is produced by Tamika Weatherspoon. Up to date is next with Arthur Thomas Kennedy, plus a look at the political documentary Tom and Harry, The Boss and the President, a look at Tom Pendergast and Harry Truman. That should be fascinating. I'm Javelani LaFall. This is Central Standard. Enjoy your day.